Affairs Committee to order. Date is February 3rd. Members, I think we have a quorum here, is that right? It may be noted that we do have a quorum. The bill we're hearing today is the Outdoor Heritage bill. It is a bill that I'm representing, or excuse me, I'm sponsoring, and it's 158, and I'll turn the meeting over to Dan.
No longer a rookie, so, you know.
Do we have any bills that aren't presented by you, Bill?
Mr. Chair and members, I bring before you today Senate File 158, which is commonly referred to around here, at least over the last 3 years, as the Outdoor Heritage Appropriations, or the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Appropriation. And with me today is Bill Becker, the Executive Director of the Outdoor Heritage Commission, Council, and for those new members that may or may not familiar with this, this is part of the one third of the 0.375% of the sales tax referendum that was passed in 2008 by the voters in the state of Minnesota. And for the last three years, we've been coming forth with recommendations that have come from the Citizens Committee that was organized by this body in 2009. And the recommendations, as a point of interest, the recommendations, the first one we had was passed off the Senate floor 67-0, went through the committee with flying colors into the floor in 67-0. So the work that the Lessard group does, which I'm a member of, along with the former Senator Phoebe, is done over the period of a year. They'll be starting for next year's appropriations coming up starting next month. They'll have their organizational meeting in February, and so it's a real active working group. We meet and deal with many organizations throughout the state of Minnesota. And I think without going on and on and on here, which I don't have to do, I think you understand where this is, what this is about. I'm going to turn it over to Executive Director Bill Becker, and he will take us through the bill. And if you have any questions, of course, please feel free to ask them at any time.
Mr. Becker, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, I am Bill Becker, Executive Director of the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. I'd like to recognize two members of the council who are in the audience, Mike Kilgore and Jim Cox, who are sitting behind me to the right. And I'd also like to once again recognize my staff, Sandy Smith and Heather Coop. Also, someone you haven't met before, Janice Watts, who's an intern, is sitting next to Ms. Smith. I'd like to overview the bill and then go through the details of the bill itself. I just wanted to start out by reminding you that the Constitution says that the Outdoor Heritage Fund must be spent to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, and forests and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. It must supplement traditional sources and may not be used as a substitute. To give you an idea of what we had before us, the council sent out its request for proposal and received 44 requests totaling $202 million. We had 30 presentations that averaged 30 minutes each on the 30 presentations that were before us. To give you an idea of where the council has been and where it's going, here are the three recommendation bills that recommendations that the council has made. You can note that we're beginning to see a pattern. We've got about 25 to 30 programs funded, and it looks like we're going to be in the $85 to $90 million per year. We provide our recommendations on an annual basis. We'll be back again before this committee, this time next year with a second recommendation. The one significant change is an increase in the Conservation Partners Legacy Grants Program. We've gone up from $4 million to $5.6 million in that particular program. That's a program operated out of DNR that's designed to build conservation in the community, small groups as well as government and non-governmental organizations may apply. The recipients of the funds, in this particular bill before you, there are 12 non-government organizations, 4 local regional governments, no federal entities involved, and 11 state government recipients. Measures of impact to date. We have, we've in this bill before you, protected 55,000 acres, restored 850 acres, and are enhancing 40,000. As the council has developed its procedures, there's been a sort of a sliding between restore and enhance in terms of what is restore and what's enhance, and I'm not sure that difference is really that great. We're affecting in this bill before you 130 shoreline miles, 75 counties, and we have a leverage of about 60 cents per dollar, which is beginning to settle in and appear to be the usual amount that we can expect. I might add that the leverage that we're talking about here includes other state funds, and we include that specifically because of the other legacy funds and the environmental trust funds. There's been a request that we coordinate, and so by recognizing that as leverage, we get an idea or a sense of how much coordination there is. Well, let's talk about acres by activity. A mere 1% is restored. 11% is fee acquisition. Keep that that figure in mind as we go forward. And 47% is easement acquisition. 41% is enhancement. Payment in lieu of taxes is an issue, so we're providing you with information on that. Payment in lieu of taxes are created by 11% of the overall acquisition. If you look at the bottom of the chart there, the annual liability in Minnesota laws of 2009 was 128, Minnesota laws of 2010, 167, and we estimate in Senate File 158, there's $178,823 in TILT liability. I want to remind you of a couple of things. One, I believe that there's a fiscal note that's been requested on this, so you'll be getting from DNR, the manager of the TILT fund, a more detailed look at it, and it'll show the fiscal year in which these liabilities come due. They don't come due immediately. It takes a year or two for the acquisition to take place, and then it takes a year or two for the acreage to get into the PILT calculation. So most of what you see in Senate File 158 shouldn't be in the upcoming biennium's cost, I do not believe. The projects are located in 75 of the 87 counties. You have a copy of this map in your packet. We strive to distribute the dollars as effectively as we can, given that we're trying to ensure that we spend the money on high-quality projects. The next slide shows the funding and acres by LSOH section. Yes.
Mr. Baker. Senator.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Becker, I apologize. I was trying to get the chairs. Can you go back to slide 8? We talked about the PILT payments, 2009-2010. Just for maybe my information and others, as we go forward, are we adding each one of these years onto each other? So with Senate File 158, it's a total of 128 from 09 plus 167 and now plus 172. Is that correct, or is the new total 172?
Mr. Becker.
Senator Carlson, you're correct that they are additive.
Thank you.
So let's talk about funding in acres per LSOHC section. Most of the investment is in the prairie and the northern forest areas of the state. Prairies are a priority of the council, and forest fragmentation is a priority, too. In fact, forest fragmentation is listed in the statutes as one of the things that we are to do. The metro area is 5% of the public and private habitat, and 3% of which is already protected. The metro region is 6% of the whole state, and it's always been a question as to how much goes to the metro region. I think you'll see that about 9%, 8 or 9% of the recommendation is going there. Let's take a look at it by biome. Most of the recommendation is in the prairie biome, again with the forest, wetland, and general habitat biomes spread approximately evenly. So recommended program highlights. Most of the proposals, 19 of 27, are continuations of previously recommended programs, including accelerating the waterfowl production area, the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project, Metro Big Rivers Program, Green Corridor Program, and Reinvest in Minnesota. This points up the council's desire to find programs that are directed toward the objectives of the council and invest in them year after year after year in order to ensure that we have, at the end of 25 years, a significant tangible legacy that can be found, smelled, felt, seen, those sorts of things. We did take the time to run the appropriations through the state's input-output model. We have found that the first year of the appropriation, 337 secondary jobs will be created. That's in addition to 36 FTEs directly supported. And in the second year, 259 jobs. As far as what does it mean to the local economies in Minnesota, the four-year contribution, according to the model, is $70 million. A little bit about the administrative budget. We have an administrative budget of $471,000 annual request. It funds three full-time staff positions who manage and track $230 million in appropriations on over 75 programs and facilitate the council process in making awards. We pay for expenses related to council meetings, office and operational expenses of the council. We are allowed 1% of the administrative budget, so 471 is about one half of 1% of what's being appropriated, and it's reduced from 600,000 as appropriated in Minnesota laws of 2010. So we're actually reducing our budget by a significant amount over what we've had in previous years. If it pleases the chair, I will go into details on the major sections of Senate File 158, if you're ready for that. And
sure.
You have in your packet a document that's an 8.5 by 11 document that we refer to as staff as the annotated bill. This gives the details of each appropriation. So you can identify it by the far right-hand column. We'll have in it outcomes and budget and original request and other data about the appropriation. Section 2 is the appropriation section. Total appropriations are $86,471,000 in FY12 and $471,000 in FY13. We divide the bill up by the constitutional biome, so the first part of the bill, subdivision 2, prairies. And there's $32,671,000 going to prairies. The first appropriation is wildlife management areas, scientific and natural areas, and prairie bank easement acquisition. This is phase 3, so this is one of those programs I referred to earlier. And we're appropriating $3,931,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire in fee wildlife management areas and scientific and natural areas, and acquire easements in the native prairie bank. We anticipate outcomes of 1,186 acres protected in fee, 150 acres protected in easement. This has a contribution to PILT of $24,000. The original request was $26,614,000 by the Department of Natural Resources. It addresses LSOHC priorities of all sections to protect shoreland and prairies and forests. Appropriation 2B is accelerated prairie restoration and enhancement on DNR lands. It's phase three as well. $1,652,000 is being appropriated to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to enhance 20,400 acres. This is directly addressing the issue that has been in the papers recently in terms of a shortage of management funds in the Department of Natural Resources for wildlands, wildlife management areas, and things of that sort. Their original request was $4,082,000, and they, too, address all the sections LSOHC section priorities of enhancing prairies on WMAs, SNAs, native prairie banks, and easements. Item 2C is buffers, Minnesota buffers for wildlife and water. It's $2,249,000 to the Board of Water and Soil Resources in cooperation with Pheasants Forever to acquire permanent conservation easements. These are built upon existing water, clean water easements, so they are expanding the riparian buffers on private land. They have a PILT liability of zero. They protect 1,156,000 acres. The leverage in this is significant at $2 million from the USDA CRP program. And this particular project addresses LSOHC priorities in the prairie to protect existing upland wetland complexes or convert agricultural land to new wetland upland complexes. And two, to number five, and enhance shallow lakes. And number six, protect expiring CRP lands. As most of you know, the federal program on conservation reserve is being reduced in terms of the acreage it covers, and this will pick up some of the acreage that's coming out. Item 2D is Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge land acquisition, phase three. And this is $1.72 million for the Nature Conservancy to acquire land or permanent easements within the Northern Tallgrass Prairie Preservation Area in western Minnesota. The anticipated leverage is $7,387, and the LSOHC priorities are prairie priority number one and number two. 2E is the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project Phase 3 at $4.5 million to the Nature Conservancy to restore 250 acres and buy and fee 1,200 acres and enhance 6,000 acres. PILT liability is zero, and the anticipated leverage is $1,613,000 and change, with that coming from the Nature Conservancy, the Environmental Trust Fund, and the North American Wetland Conservation Act. This addresses prairie priorities 1 and 2 and 7, protect migratory bird habitat to increase migratory breeding success. Item 2F is the Cannon River Headwaters Habitat Complex Phase 1. This is a new program that we're looking at this year. It's $1,533,000 to the Trust for Public Land to acquire and restore lands in the Cannon River watershed for wildlife management area purposes. It'll acquire 510 acres in fee. The PILT liability will be just under $13,000, and the anticipated leverage is $326,000 of Clean Water Fund, Environmental Trust Fund, and private dollars. This addresses LSOHC priorities 1, protect existing wetland complexes, and 2, protect remnant native prairie big woods forest, and 7, protecting migratory habitat. Item 2G is accelerating the Wildlife Management Area Program Phase 3. That's $5.5 million to the Commissioner of Natural, to Pheasants Forever, excuse me, to acquire prairie and other habitat areas for wildlife management area purchases. It'll restore 0 acres, but in fee protect 1,275 acres. Built liability is a little over $41,000, with anticipated leverage in PF chapter funds of $607,000. It addresses the prairie priority 1, 2, 5, which is restore and enhance Shellot Lakes, 6, protect expiring CRP lands, 7, protect migratory habitat. 2H is accelerating the waterfowl production area phase 3, $9,815,000 to Pheasants Forever to accelerate the acquisition of wetlands and grasslands to be added to the waterfowl production area system in Minnesota. The protection will be acquiring in fee 2,250 acres with a PILT liability to the state of 0. The anticipated leverage is $5,125,000 in PF dollars and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service dollars. Past appropriations to this particular program have been $3.5 million, $5.6 million. And the LSOHC priorities are Prairie 1, 2, 5, 6, and 7. Item 2I is the Green Corridor Legacy Program, Phase 3, with $1,771,000 to the Redwood Area Development Corporation to acquire land for wildlife management area purchases. They'll acquire in fee 275 acres, restore those 275 acres. There'll be a PILT liability of a little over $11,000 added to the state budget. And the LSOHC priorities 1 are the primary priorities. The next subdivision is Subdivision 3, Forests, for $14,371. 3A, Minnesota Forest for the Future, Phase 3, is $5,409,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for working forest easements fee acquisition. And the Minnesota Forest for the Future program, pursuant to Minnesota Statute Section 84.66. This is the major easement program we have. We will have easements on 330,700 acres, zero PILT liability. The anticipated leverage is $2,250,000 from TNC. And this addresses the Northern Forest priorities of protecting shoreland and preventing parcelization and fragmentation. Item 3B in forests is LaSalle Lake, protecting critical Mississippi headwaters habitat from $4,632,000 to the Trust for Public Land to acquire land adjacent to LaSalle Lake in Hubbard County. TPL will restore 84 acres, protect in fee 433 acres. It will create a PILT liability of 34,000 acres, but there's leverage anticipated of $3,963,000 from other state funds. And it addresses LSOHC priority in the northern forest area of 1, protect shoreland and critical habitat, and 2, protect forest land to prevent parcelization and fragmentation. Item 3C is accelerated forest habitat enhancement phase 2, $826,000 for the Commissioner of Natural Resources to restore and enhance land in state forests. Again, this is a program that addresses some of the shortfall funding at the Department of Natural Resources. It'll enhance 7,364 acres. It addresses Northern Forest priorities, number 1, protect shoreland and critical habitat, 2, preventing fragmentation in the forest prairie priority of enhancing wildlife, wetlands, shallow lakes, and aspen parklands.
Mr. Becker?
Yes.
Excuse me a second. Senator Hackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Becker, just so I make sure I understand it. So, let's take the LaSalle Lake, and the PILT liability is $34,000. Are we saying then that we're going to pay $34,000 a year?
Yes.
For that?
Okay. Mr. Chair, excuse me.
All right. Mm-hmm. So,
Senator Saxon, yes.
So, and thank you. And Mr. Chair, so Hubbard County in this case would be the the person that we'd be paying in lieu of taxes to?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxon, that's correct.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Senator Higgins.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Becker, and we're going to be paying those PILT payments out from the 3/8 sales tax funds that come in?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Senator Higgins. No, that will be paid out of the general fund, which is the source of the statutory source of the payments.
Okay.
Senator Sacktog.
And Mr. Chair, and Mr. Becker, and we did, am I correct? I'm trying to remember when you did research on this, you found that you couldn't pay PILT out of the 3/8. Is that correct?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sacktog, we inquired of the Attorney General's office about the legality of doing it. And to make a long story short, they said that because of the purposes to which PILT are put, which are local roads, county police, fire, that sort of thing, and because there's currently an existing source that would have to be substituted for, it would probably be unconstitutional to pay PILT out of the 3/8 fund, outdoor heritage funds particularly.
Thank you.
Senator
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, will that be a growing liability to the state then over the years, or where is that going?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I believe that if we continue to acquire land, the PILT will grow.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Yes, Senator.
Maybe I could have staff come and hand out that ruling. Actually, I do have a copy of it for everybody here. I'll have them give it to you so you get a little better idea as to what Mr. Becker's talking about. But we did inquire right out of the chute after we formed the committee on that very issue. Should we be allowed to expend sales tax dollars on taxes, pay for taxes? And it was ruled, I think that's the one.
Senator Kielash.
It was ruled at that time by the Attorney General's office that it could not be expended for those dollars.
Senator
Kielash. That was 3 years ago.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm not sure. What it seems like is the Outdoor Heritage Fund is actually spending tax dollars without going through the budgeting process here, or is this always updated in, I don't know which budget the PILT payments would come out of, the general fund budget, DNR's budget? Who's paying for that out of which?
Senator Becker.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash. Up until this year, the payments for this PILT payment came through this committee. It's been changed to revenue?
Taxes.
So they will deal with this issue.
Mr. Chair, just to
Senator
follow
Kielash.
Up, I'm not sure of when we purchase land, are we also including the PILT payments addition to our budget at the same time, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Senator?
I think I understand the question. There's an obligation of PILT, and that's been here for many years. The state of Minnesota has been paying that. And this is being added to it. Now, the acquisitions that go on here are obviously being added to it. But no, there's no dollars expended from
the tax
dollars to offset that. Now, I will tell you, and I know this was going to be a question, and it's been somewhat of a contentious issue. I also have here, and maybe staff should pass this out as well, there was a legislative audit that was done a couple years ago, and we received it, I think, last year, and what it showed, and the big question was, I think, what is PILT payments to counties and townships with regards to private paying, the state of Minnesota and the federal government paying versus private? And I think you'll find that the audit shows, and in fact, it surprised me, in fact, that a lot of counties are benefiting by PILT versus private. So that was something that is quite not astounding to me, but I guess I just assumed that if the state and the federal government were paying the taxes, that they would get a break and not have to pay as much as private. That turned out to be not the case. So a lot of counties actually benefit from PILT payment now. But, however, this does come out of the general fund, and it's an issue that I think you've heard Senator Tom Bach talk about over the last couple of years as to how we continue down this path. Now, I will also tell you that I'm looking at a, I don't know if it's a nothing ingenious by any stretch, but the lands bill that we just passed out of here, for instance, where the DNR does sell land, and those dollars have been going back into the to a certain area of the DNR's budget. I'm looking at a proposal and would certainly like some help on it if I could. But I've talked to the tax chair about rerouting those dollars to offset the pilt we're talking about today. However, those dollars will have to be replaced with something else. I mean, that's the answer. That's the answer I got when I was a minority, and that's the answer that I'm going to have to deal with now in the majority. So, but I think people would better appreciate having to pay pilt out of dollars that were gained out of selling DNR land, as we do every year as well. So that's being worked on. But it is an obligation that we continue to do when you do acquisition. Now, maybe Mr. Becker would take the time to explain the majority of the property that we deal with is fee property with regards to the owners continuously owning it. Our first shining star was up in Senator Saxhog's area of the 170. I keep throwing the number around 177 to 180,000 acres that we actually paid to the owner a fee for that, those acres now, which we have perpetual easement for the rest of our lives in the state of Minnesota that we can go on there and hunt and fish. And, of course, that ownership was kept by the private, and they continue to pay private taxes on that. So there's a mix of everything, but the majority of what we do is that kind of acquisition, not necessarily always acquisition. But
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Becker.
Senator Ingebretson, your comment goes back. The fact that only 11% of the acres that we're acquiring are being acquired in fee. The majority of the protection and acquisition is through easement, and that's 47% of our bill, opposed to 11% in fee.
Okay.
Shall we continue, Mr. Chair?
Yep, let's do it.
3D, Northeastern Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Habitat Partnership Phase 2 is 988,000 to Pheasants Forever 2 in cooperation with the Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Society, acquire and enhance lands for WMA purposes. We'll acquire 745 acres with a pilt liability of $6,679. The LSOHC priority that is being addressed is Forest Priority 4 to restore forest-based wildlife habitat. 3E, Lower Mississippi River Habitat Partnership. This is the second appropriation for them, with $707,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to enhance and acquire habitat in the Lower Root and Lower Zumbro River watersheds. They'll acquire in fee 200 acres, create a pilt liability estimated to be a little under $5,000. And the priority they're meeting is Southeast Forest Priority Number 2 to protect habitat in rivers, cold water streams, and associated upland habitat. 3F is protect key forest habitat lands in Cass County Phase 2. It's $604,000. Cass County is to acquire land and fee for forest wildlife habitat. This is an effort to consolidate and prevent fragmentation, and they'll acquire 379 acres. There's no pilt liability on that, and there's leverage of $39,000. 3G is state forest acquisition, $1,205,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire land and fee and permanent management access easement for state forest under Minnesota Statutes 86A.05 sub 7. They'll acquire 415 acres in fee, 1 acre in easement for access to an isolated piece of land, and the fee will create a $7,000 pilt liability. Subdivision 4 is Wetlands. 4A, the Reinvest in Minnesota Wetlands Reserve Acquisition and Restoration Program Partnership, is $13 million to the Board of Soil and Water Resources to acquire permanent conservation easements and restore wetlands and associated upland habitat in cooperation with the United States Department of Agriculture Wetlands Reserve Program. There'll be nearly 10,000 acres under easement, an anticipated leverage of $20,800,000 from the federal government WRP program, and it meets all LSOHC priorities in the prairie.
I might also add that this is in addition to past appropriations to this program, an FY11 of $7 million, FY10 of $9 million. 4B is accelerated shallow lakes and wetland restoration and enhancement, phase three. $936,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to develop engineering designs for shallow lakes and wetlands and restore and enhance shallow lakes. The enhancement in this particular case is 5,841 acres. There's no pilt liability associated with it. And it's addressing LSOHC forest priorities to enhance shallow lakes and prairie priorities to enhance shallow lakes. 4C, shallow lake restoration protection, wild rice lakes. This is $1,891,000 to Ducks Unlimited and the Board of Water Resources to acquire wild rice lake shoreline habitat in fee as permanent conservation easements. The appropriation will be divided as follows: $500,000 to the Department of Natural Resources, $1,100,000 to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, $291,000 to Ducks Unlimited. They'll protect in fee 150 acres. They'll ease 550 acres, and they'll create a pilt liability of $3,750. The anticipated leverage is $20,000 from DU, and it addresses LSOHC forest priority to protect shoreland and critical habitat on wild rice and shallow lakes. Subdivision 5 is habitat, aquatic, and in general. There's $22,914,000 in Subdivision 5 for habitat, aquatic, in general. 5A is accelerated aquatic management area habitat program, phase 3. This is $6,500,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire interest in land in fee or permanent easements for aquatic management areas. This is one of the most critical programs in terms of retaining water quality and fish habitat quality in the lakes of Minnesota, which are an important economic engine of Minnesota's economy. We'll acquire in fee 450 acres, ease 609 acres, and enhance 87 acres. The pilt liability is a little over $18,000.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Becker, is it a legitimate use of Lassard Sam's funds for fighting AIS, the aquatic invasive species? Is that a legitimate use of funds? Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, if you believe that that's protection of our aquatic resources, then it is. If you don't believe it protects it, then it isn't.
Thank you.
Okay. Continue.
The leverage on the AMA program is $5,040,000 cash value of donations and anticipated. 5B, Coldwater Fish Habitat Enhancement Program, phase 3, is $1,533,000 to Minnesota Trout Unlimited. We anticipate leverage of $180,000, and we expect enhancement of stream miles of streams covering 81 acres in Minnesota. 5B's appropriation addresses the northern forest priority of protect shoreline, protect cold water streams in the southeast forest, and then in number 4, restore and enhance habitat on public lands. 5C is land addition to the Janet Johnson Memorial Wildlife Management Area, is $577,000 to Chisago County to acquire in fee land to be added to the Janet Johnson Memorial WMA. It's 109 acres, $4,000 pilt liability, and addresses LSOHC priority for metro urbanizing areas to protect native prairie and to provide habitat corridors. 5D, Metro Big Rivers Habitat Phase 2, is $5 million in the first year to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for agreements to acquire interest in land and fee or permanent conservation easements and restore and enhance natural systems associated with the Mississippi, Minnesota, and St. Croix Rivers. It will be divided as follows: $960,000 to the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge, $150,000 to Great River Greening, $840,000 to the Minnesota Land Trust, $150,000 to the Friends of the Mississippi River, and $2.9 million to the Trust for Public Land. In combination, they'll restore 41 acres by and fee, 433 acres by easements on 300 acres and enhance 130 acres. This addresses metro urbanizing priorities to protect and enhance and restore native prairie, big woods, and oak savanna, and protect habitat corridors in Mississippi, in the Mississippi, Minnesota, St. Croix rivers. And four, to protect and enhance, restore riparian and littoral areas in the metropolitan area. 5E, protecting sensitive shorelands in north central Minnesota, is $1,098,000. This goes to the Leech Lake Watershed Foundation and the Minnesota Land Trust as follows: $339,000 to the Leech Lake Watershed Foundation, $741,000 to the Minnesota Land Trust, and $18,000 to the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to pay acquisition-related expenses and monitoring of permanent easements. I want to point out one feature of this appropriation, which is near the bottom, beginning with the money appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund for easement acquisitions may be used to establish a monitoring and enforcement fund as approved in the accomplishment plan and subject to Subdivision 15. We'll get to Subdivision 15 later, but it's a new feature of the bill. We, under this program, will ease 600 acres and address northern forest priorities of protection of shoreline and protection of forest land through easements. 5F, restoring native habitat and water quality to the Shell Rock River, is $2,577,000 to the Shell Lake Watershed District to acquire land and fee the headwaters of the Shell Rock River for aquatic management purposes. They're acquiring 257 acres. The priorities that it addresses is protecting existing wetlands and upland complexes in the prairie section. The last appropriation for programmatic work is 5G, Outdoor Heritage Conservation Partner Grants Program, Phase 3. This is $5.629 million to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for a program to provide competitive matching grants of up to $400,000 to local, regional, state, and national organizations. The outcomes are to be determined because this particular program, the outcomes depend on the grants awarded, and we don't know that until the appropriation's been made and the money has been made available. $319,000 of this appropriation may be spent for personnel costs and other administrative costs at the DNR. It does require a match of between 10 to 15%. It bifurcates the program into grant applications of $25,000 or less and over $25,000 in order to allow the commissioner to provide a separate simplified application process for the smaller grant programs. We've heard a lot of feedback that the Department of Natural Resources application process is like writing a master's thesis and looking for something that's a little easier to do. It's important to note that all projects must conform to the Minnesota Statewide Conservation and Preservation Plan.
Excuse me, Mr. Becker. Senator Saxog.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Becker. I may have cut you off before you probably knew you were going to tell us this. But is this a pretty competitive program? I mean, you said that the master's thesis could be a stumbling block, but do you get a lot of people that are applying for this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxar.
Mr. Becker.
Yes, there are a reasonable number of applying. It's in the 200 and some odd range.
Not everybody gets one. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Saxon.
No. No, the screening is rigorous. It's done by a panel of experts that are brought together by the Department of Natural Resources, experts in resource management. So, as I was saying, Mr. Chair, it must conform to the Minnesota Statewide Conservation and Preservation Plan. Wildlife habitat projects must also conform to the Minnesota Wildlife Action Plan. The project requirements apply to all the grants, and we'll go through the project requirements briefly in a moment. Under Subdivision 6 is the administration. 6A is $175,000 for a contract with the Department of Natural Resources to provide fiscal services as the fiscal agent for the state. The function here is to ensure that dollars spent by non-governmental organizations are spent for public purposes and are spent legally and are spent properly. 6B is to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for Council Administration. That's the $471,000 we talked about earlier. There's a second $471,000, which is the second year, fiscal year of the biennium. 6C is technical assistance panels, $42,000 to evaluate the restoration projects as required under Minnesota Statute Section 97A.056, Subdivision 10. This is new this year. That statute was passed into law last year. Subdivision 7, I want to talk a little bit about availability of the appropriation. They're generally available for 3 years until June 30th of 2014. Funds for restoration and enhancement are available until June 30th, 2016, or 4 years after acquisition, whichever is later, in order to complete restoration and enhancement work. Generally, this is because of the amount of time it takes to deal with Mother Nature. It's difficult to get the restorations completed within a 2-year biennial period. This money becomes available in July. The planning starts. They have only one field season. If it's a tough field season, we're giving them an extra year to complete their work. Subdivision 8 is accomplishment plans. Each program manager, each program is required to develop and submit an accomplishment plan and periodic accomplishment reports. As I said in my earlier presentation to you all, one of the functions of the LSOHC staff is to make sure that the dollars appropriated are used as they are intended. We do this through the accomplishment plans and status reports. Subdivision 9, project requirements. There are a variety of items in here. Plant vegetation and sow seeds of only native ecotypes to Minnesota. Conditions on conservation easements, such as they must be permanent and specify the parties and specify the habitat being protected. Provide a long-term stewardship plan. We require recipients to prepare and retain ecological restoration and management plans that to the degree practicable is consistent with current conservation science. For new lands acquired, the recipient must prepare a restoration and management plan, including identification of sufficient funding for implementation. The recipient must provide the council with documentation of the process to select parcels acquired in fee or as permanent conservation easements. This is so we have some assurance that the Outdoor Heritage Fund is buying the best available habitat. Related transaction costs, including, and also in relationship to conservation easements, we require that the easement purchaser provide the council with all related transaction costs, including but not limited to appraisals, legal fees, recording fees, commissions, or other costs and donations, so that we have a better understanding of the costs and what occurred in these programs. Item G in Subdivision 9, it's all restoration and enhancement projects funded with money appropriated under this section must be on land permanently protected by a conservation easement or public ownership or in public waters. So what we invest in is publicly protected. Item H is to provide the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council and the Commissioner of Management budget with an analysis of increased operations and maintenance costs likely to be incurred by public entities. Subdivision 10, payment conditions and capital equipment. These are all of these pass-through appropriations are administered on a reimbursement basis, and capital equipment expenditures for specific items in excess of $10,000 must be itemized in and improved as part of the accomplishment plan, so we have some control over fungible assets. Subdivision 11 is purchase of recycled and recyclable materials. Subdivision 12 is accessibility. Subdivision 13 is land acquisition restrictions. The land that we buy must be used in perpetuity for the purpose for which the appropriation was made. property subject to this subdivision may not be altered from the intended use of the interest in real property or conveyed to anyone else. Turn now to subdivision 14. Subdivision 13 is essentially implemented through subdivision 14, the real property interest report. And that means that the person responsible for the property purchase must submit annual reports on the status of the real property, attesting that it's still being used as intended and hasn't been conveyed. Subdivision 15, easement monitoring and enforcement requirements. This is new in this bill. It allows us to use dollars for monitoring and to place dollars in a fund to produce an ongoing stream for stewardship costs. Subdivision 16, successor organizations. This is just in case an organization is dissolved. We move now to Section 3, Minnesota Statutes 2010. And then we're amending the statutes to provide a definition of recipient, meaning the person who is responsible for the deliverables. This is to remove some confusion that the fiscal agent had about who the recipient of the funds was. Section 4, Minnesota Statutes 2010, amends Section 97A.056, Subdivision 2, to read, this redefines in legislative terms to be at the pleasure of the appointing authority and to provide continuity of legislative appointments, having them serve until they are replaced. And finally, Section 5 amends Laws of Minnesota 2009, Chapter 172, Article 1, Section 2, Subdivision 3. This is an old appropriation. This adds no cost to the bill. And it allows up to $750,000 of that old appropriation to be deposited into an account to be used for long-term monitoring and enforcement of the easements acquired under the Forest Legacy Program, Forest for the Futures Program. And ladies and gentlemen of the committee, that's the bill.
Any questions? Discussion? Senator Pappas.
As a new member on the committee, it would have actually been fun to have pictures of all the project proposals. Probably hard to do.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Becker.
Senator Pappas, we are a staff of three. It's on the list. And program managers will be getting a request soon to submit pictures. The first final status reports are coming in toward the end of this fiscal year, and they are required to provide visual evidence of what they've done.
Any other discussion? Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Becker, as you went through this, there's lots of places where the Department of Natural Resources becomes involved in one way or the other. They manage the easements. So, generally, when they're purchasing property, or when the council is purchasing property, does the DNR sign off on those, or have some at least yes, no, or this is a good idea, or do they have any input at all?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Becker,
Senator Saxog, that's an excellent question. In prior editions of this recommendations bill, in each appropriation where an entity other than the Department of Natural Resources was purchasing land that might be conveyed to the Department of Natural Resources, we asked the commissioner to approve of that particular piece of land that's being purchased so that there was no doubt that it was in the state interest and the state had a good use for the land. We've worked very closely with the Department of Natural Resources in their prioritization of lands that they're interested in. They, in turn, have worked very closely and coordinated with the applicants to the council. And I think that it's a fair statement to say that the land being acquired in this bill to be conveyed to the Department of Natural Resources is land that the Department of Natural Resources thinks it needs. We're pushing hard on the DNR to be strategic about their acquisition. We're pushing hard on them to be precise in their purchases. And we want to see them filling out wildlife management areas, roundouts, things of that sort, as opposed to buying isolated pieces of parcels of land. So I think that it's fair to say that the parcels of land being purchased in this bill are the ones that the department would approve of.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, can you tell me how many acres you'll be purchasing this year through this program or through this bill, how many acres you'll be purchasing in fee and how many acres you'll be taking in easements this year for this bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dimes, yes, I can. We will purchase in fee 10,243 acres and in easement 45,196 acres if everything occurs as promised. That would be slide 6 of the PowerPoint.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, this looks like an amazing pile of work that this committee has done over the last while. And I, of course, am going to focus on something mundane and not part of the major part of the bill. That's kind of what I do on some days. But I'm looking at the makeup and appointment of the members of the council. And I was in and out of the room, and so maybe you touched on this and I just wasn't here to hear it. But it looks like you're removing 4 legislators from the council?
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, perhaps Mr. Knopf could address that.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, they're not removing the 4 members. What they're doing is making the 4 members basically be appointed at the pleasure of the appointing authority instead of giving them fixed terms. Confusion came up with the 4-year terms for all of the members because it would have run till 2013 for the members, and now the members don't fit the categories that they originally appointed. So what this would do is say that they serve at the pleasure of the appointing authority. So they're still the 4 legislative members. They just don't have a fixed term, as the public members do.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Knopf, the appointing body is the usual committee on committees and whatever.
Turn that off.
So could you envision a time where one of the legislative members ticks off the rest of the legislature and they just pull it up and remove that person?
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, that's a possibility, but it's also in legislative committees, that's also a possibility. I mean, the leadership, it's still the Senate committee on our subcommittee on committees of the Committee on Rules and Administration that would make that decision for the Senate. It'd be the Speaker of the House in the House.
Thank you.
Senator Kelash.
Yeah, Mr. Becker, do you have a total so far of the PILT obligations that this fund, the legacy fund, has accumulated in the last 3 years or the 2 budgets, whatever it is?
Mr. Becker.
Chair, Senator Kelash, I can approximate it by looking at slide 8 in the PowerPoint, and it appears to be approximately $450,000 to $475,000 if this recommendation is put in place.
And that's for the
Senator
2 years?
That's for 3 years.
That will be for the total accumulations that the legacy funds have done over for this part of the bill for the total of this budget cycle as well?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kelash, that will be the total of the first 3 recommendations that will annually be paid to the counties, our best estimate.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ingebrigtsen, what time in the process are you going to be thinking of entertaining amendments?
I guess that's certainly can be done right now unless anybody else has any problems or any questions. I know there's a couple amendments that that are possibly going to be entertained.
Mr. Chair, time is appropriate, I would ask that the A2 and the A3 amendments be passed out.
Okay, we'll pass those out.
Do you want Kilmore or somebody to help you out?
And members, if you want to turn to the bill, page 18, subdivision 9, subsection B is the part of the bill that I'm going to be doing some work on. You're proposing to.
You're muttering.
I'm sorry, Senator Higgins. While the amendments are being passed out, if you would turn to page 18 of the bill, subdivision 9, subsection B. And it appears like the amendments are pretty well passed out. So if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I would like to start with the A3 amendment.
Senator Skoy, go ahead.
Members, the A3 amendment is an effort that Senator Stumpf has been working on for a number of years, dealing with types of seeds and where the seed is growing for these restoration projects. This subsection B has confusing language that makes it difficult for the people that are bidding on these jobs to understand where the seed is going to come from and what the cost of it might be. And from my perspective, I don't think the genetics of the plant that's going to grow matters much where the original seed is developed. So what I'm proposing to do with the A3 amendment is to remove this provision from the bill, and then also removing the conditions in the bill that refer to subdivision 9, subsection B.
Senator Skoy, do you want to just do one at a time then?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think we should do the A3 amendment first. It is the A2 amendment deals with the same subject, but it's dealing with it language that's in statute, and I think Mr. Knopf will talk about not being used, but is confusing. But right now, I just want to deal with this bill.
Senator Skoy moves the A3 amendment. Is there a discussion? Yes, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I wonder whether we could hear from maybe there are some folks in the room who helped come up with this concept and could give us some background on it. It's a new issue to me, and I'd like some information about it.
Senator Skoy, do you know
from and how it works?
And Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, I do apologize for this. The testifier that I had, sons broke their wrist this afternoon, and he got called away for an emergency. I did tell him that I would try to move forward the best I could with it. Maybe Mr. Knopf could be helpful, or somebody else in the room.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask Mr. Knopf. Mr. Knopf is very familiar with this. There's been a lot of discussion in our committee over the past 4 years with regards to this. I think he could explain it real well.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, this provision was sought out as a compromise from what was passed in 2007. And that's part of Senator Skoy's second amendment. It was a statutory provision trying to define and talking about the 25 miles. We'll get into that on his next amendment. But as when that was determined to be unworkable, this provision was added to a number of bills the last couple of years, and what it is is it's something that people worked on that people thought they could live with as far as the ecotypes of seed. But apparently, as I understand from Senator Skoy, this has been causing some confusion. But this was kind of compromised language over what was passed in 2007 into statute, and it's been kind of revamped over time. But it's been part of this bill, the LCCMR bill, and some other appropriation bills of the last few years. And as Senator Skoy said, he had a witness to testify, but it's my understanding that even with this compromise language, there's still been some confusion over what seeds can be used, and to the extent that somebody can bid, somebody that's, if they're 100 miles away as opposed to 20 miles away, do they always have to go to the person who's 20 miles away? That's been part of the confusion over this language.
So, Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Higgins.
And Mr. Knopf, so the point of the language is to ensure that the seed is from the very close surrounding area, so you're not introducing or contaminating or whatever the concept might be. What's there?
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, the way I understand the original effort was to have the seed come from an extremely close area to the project. But if you're thinking about plant genetics, the genetics that's in the seed that you're going to plant, it really doesn't matter if the seed is grown in Roseau County or Redwood County. It's the same seed. But I think the original intent was to make sure that the seed used for these restoration projects were from a native prairie grass area so that they would be native types of plants that would fit into the prairie ecosystem. I think the prairie really is a quite large geographic area and certainly would extend outside the boundaries of Minnesota. Not that I'm proposing that the seed come from anywhere outside of Minnesota, but I just think that it's a confusing part of the project requirements. It's adding additional costs where it really isn't adding any benefits. And I would propose and continue on Senator Stump's effort to remove this provision.
Any other discussion? Senator Kielash.
Senator Skoy, on part of this I agree with, but where it's 18.16 and 18.70, appropriate under this section must be vegetation of only ecotypes native to Minnesota, I think that means it has to be an original species in Minnesota. And are we... I think we want to keep that kind of requirement in so we're not bringing in something that wasn't native to the prairies in Minnesota, you know, or that. But that kind of focus on keeping it native to what was originally there is you're also taking out, I think.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kielhoff, maybe Mr. Knopf or the other witness could help me. Wouldn't the project developers put what conditions for plant types on that they would be wanting for each individual project?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy,
Mr. Knopf,
as I understand, what your amendment would do would be to leave it up to the professionals and the agencies that work with the professionals to determine what species of plant is produced, rather than putting it in law.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, I think that those conditions will occur based on the project developers, but not in statute.
Mr. Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Skoy, are there issues with availability of these seeds, or is it just the cost, or what's really the driver making this change? Is it an availability issue?
Senator Skoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, originally with the 25-mile requirement, it certainly was an availability issue. I think at this point it's more of just a clarification so that the folks bidding on the project have a clearer understanding of what the requirements are, and we'll let the project developers put those conditions in as opposed to the legislature.
Any more discussion on amendment
A3? Yes, Mr. Chair, I certainly would support this amendment. There's been a ton of work done on this by not only Senator Skoy but Senator Stump over the last 4 years that I've been here and the committees before. So a point of clarification should really finally come and giving these folks, the professionals, the idea to deal with this and to be able to grow that actual seed within 25 miles of a project is just out of question. You just can't do it, and that's what's driving the cost up. And that was one of the parts of the discussion and was very, very valid.
Seeing no more discussion, Senator Skoy moves the amendment for Senate File 158 as A3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The ayes have it.
And thank you, members. And, Mr. Chair, at this point, then, I would move the A2 amendment. And I think Mr. Knopf has started the discussion around this. This language isn't statute. It's not being used, from my understanding, and it's confusing the issue. And so this repealer is removing the similar language from statute.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Higgins.
Senator Scully, is this just for the Lasard-Sams projects, or does this include LCCMR projects or any other kind of projects?
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, my understanding is this is broader, but perhaps Mr. Knopf could verify that.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, what this does is it removes the provision I mentioned earlier from 2007. This has a 25-mile provision where it has to be within the county or within 25 miles of the county border to be used. And, again, this hasn't been used. There were definitions placed in statute. There was an initial attempt to start to apply these to projects, to specific appropriations, and that's where it kind of broke down, and I mentioned that the other language had become a compromise for this. And what this would do is remove it from the statutes. Again, it really isn't used at the present time. Right now it says that for the purpose of this chapter, in Chapter 84, these terms are defined, but those terms are hardly ever used in Chapter 84. I think the intent was to start applying them to some of the restoration projects around the state. And again, that didn't work out, and so that other compromise language was developed.
Thank you.
Any other discussion?
I'll renew my motion.
Okay. Hearing none, voting on the Senator Skoy moved Senate File 158 with the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Senator, do we have more testifiers?
Mr. Chair, I have no other testifiers at this time, at least not that I know of. If anybody would like to come forward, fine. Otherwise, I think that completes the description of the bill, and I would invite members to any time come to the meetings that we have, which will be commencing, I think, February 11th. There's public notice to those meetings. Anytime you'd like to come to those meetings, you're certainly more than welcome with that. If there's nothing else, I would move Senate File 158 as amended to pass and for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the Senate File 158 to pass and move for the possible inclusions. Right?
That's correct.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Bill moves.
That's it.
Thank you. Okay.
Stays, yeah.
Thank you very much. That concludes.
That concludes our meeting. Thank you very much.
Okay, you too.